and we are the Nonprofits. I'm your host, Dennis Lube, but why I'm supposed to need these Matt Dillahunty and Russell Glasser characters is beyond me. In my day, we didn't have no fancy hangout to come to you live from on the 14th of August, 2012. No, sir. We had to break into your house, tie you up, and yell at you one at a time at gunpoint. Why, we'd have clawed out each other's entrails with our toenails to be sponsored by a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state like the atheist community of Austin. And we didn't have no fancy voicemail at 512-371-2911 or high-tech website at www.atheist-community.org. If you wanted to know about us, if you wanted to know more about us, you had to hunt it down and beat it out of us with sticks. You think it's hard listening to us broadcast live every Tuesday from 7:30 to 8:30 Central Time? Ha! You've got it easy. You try listening to us 25-8 tied to a chair with toothpicks shoved up your nostrils. It's not like it was when you had to fuel an angry mob with lies and innuendo to participate in the show. Now you have the posh directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com to join the chat room. So let's sit back in your comfy little chair and suck on your little frou-frou drink, but don't think for a minute that makes you a real atheist.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to the good new days as opposed to the good old days. So, first off, I got to thank Russell for putting together the last minute, let me grab some people and do a rogue nonprofit show. Good job with that.
Oh, yeah. The guests did really cool. Well.
Mm-hmm.
And
thanks,
as
guys.
You can see, we have a special guest to start off the show. Hi, Ben.
Hey.
This is Ben's, I believe, first time getting broadcast on camera for something that anybody actually watched, I guess.
But he's been on the show before, and he's back specifically because, you know, a lot of us have been trying to raise money for Camp Quest. I did the drag show thing, and now we're in a battle with there's a bunch of bloggers battling against PZ Myers. We'll get a link up later on. But Ben has a report for us, which we've been desperately waiting for us. Ben, it's over to you.
All right.
Hi.
You want to show off your shirt first?
This is my Camp Quest shirt.
Camp Quest 2012. Woo!
I just got back from Camp Quest. It was really fun.
What'd you guys do? How long were you there?
A week.
So what were you doing all week?
Well, we did a lot of activities. We went swimming every day. And we did, a different thing each day. On Tuesday we did archery, which was probably my favorite part, but we also did swimming every day. And there was this big thing called the blob. It's like where somebody sits on the end of it. It's like this big inflatable thingy. Someone sits on the end and then another one jumps, and then a heavier person jumps onto it and makes you jump up and then fall into the pool. Camp Quest was so much fun.
Awesome.
Cool. Any kind of, so Camp Quest, is everybody an atheist there?
Yeah, pretty much.
What's that like?
I'm glad that I don't have to just, keep it secret that I'm an atheist and stuff, because everybody else is.
Yeah, what's it like for the rest of the school year?
Some people, I'm not going to say that they don't really like me, but whenever they find out that, if I tell them I don't believe in God, they'll be like, and they're like, that's crazy, and I have to go, okay, I don't want an argument about it, but here, pretty much everyone knows that everyone else is an atheist. So I'm really glad.
So does that include the counselors?
Yes.
Except
we, took over a YMCA, and, there were still, cooks and, guards that were from the YMCA, so I'm So they were kind of counseled.
Well,
so
it's a step up from last year, right? Because you were at an actual Christian camp that they had rented out, and this year it was just a YMCA facility, which is also religious, but not as
they had
bad,
like
right?
a bunch of like braces and stuff on the wall of the cafeteria, like they did last year.
Do you guys talk about atheism officially or do any kind of science or critical thinking stuff?
We do science stuff, but not really talk about atheism. We sometimes talk about it, but not.
Like what kind of science stuff?
We did like this thing called propeller cars. It was really fun. We glued all these popsicle sticks together, and we had wheels and stuff. We tried to make, like, this car that was run by a propeller.
I heard you did some electronic circuits, too?
Yeah, we did that. But some people paid for a take-home kit, which they got,
It's not
so
better.
They got to take home circuits.
Well, it's not better than the circuit kit you already got for a couple Christmases ago, right?
It looks more. It's like it doesn't have like that snap circuit thingy.
Uh huh.
So it's like I don't know. It's
okay.
Like different.
So, what was your absolute favorite moment of the whole week?
Let's see. I don't know. Everything.
Everything. Are you going to go again next year?
Yes.
Are you taking friends with you next year?
No.
No.
this was your second year there. So did you meet many people that you already knew from last year?
There was only one in my cabin, but there were a few kids that from my cabin last year. That were in the older cabin.
All right. Did you find out if any live in Austin?
Most of them were, like, in different places.
All right. Well, do you think other kids should go to Camp Quest?
Yes.
All right.
Do you think I should go to Camp Quest?
As a counselor, yes.
Oh, awesome. Beth and I are actually looking into the possibility of going there to do camp counselor stuff because we like to do fun stuff.
All right. Well, maybe you guys will run into each other next year.
Yes, and if I'm your counselor, Ben, I'm going to be really, really mean, right?
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? Dennis, chat room?
Uh-huh.
Oh, somebody wants to know if you did any fizz stuff with rockets.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Well, if I'm ever the counselor, we'll do something with rockets, because I like rockets.
Don't okay. You? And magic, no doubt.
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Ben, for giving us our yearly Camp Quest report. We'll look forward to seeing you again next year, if not earlier, you know.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Great job.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye, old people. I am tired of you now. I want to go play and have fun. But anyway, it's you know, Camp Quest is one of those things where whenever they ask if we can do anything, if we can help raise money, you know, whatever way we can participate, I'm always, you know, eager to get involved. Another thing, Todd Stiefel emailed me the other day to talk about encouraging people to participate in not just Foundation Beyond Belief, but specifically their Leukemia and Lymphoma Society teams that they're building. And so if you go to foundationbeyondbelief.org/LLS-registration, and we'll get that link up as well, you can actually join an existing team or create a new team. The goal is to be the first organization, to raise $1 million for cancer.
Cool.
Yes. Russell got it. I was looking at the other screen. So that's going on. Other announcements to get out of the way. There's a convention coming up in Denver, and I don't know what it is about you know, every time I post what my schedule is going to be or where I'm going to be speaking, somebody's like, oh, I live in that city and had no idea that this was going on. I wish I had better solutions. We've really got to do a better job of communicating what's going on to people. I guess part of it would be nice if we would stop skipping Tuesdays and actually have the shows and use it as a news service as well.
Yeah.
But it is difficult to kind of organize everybody's schedule, and we really appreciate that people have hung with us through a lot of really weird scheduling, including long times off or long periods of time where we didn't do a show. But coming up in Denver over Labor Day weekend is the Atheist Alliance America convention called the Ascent of Atheism. And I'll be there. I'm going to be sitting on a panel with the Thinking Atheist and Aaron Ra, two people who I greatly respect and admire, and it's an honor to be able to sit on a panel with them to talk about YouTube atheism, which actually I wasn't very involved in previously. I mean, clips from the show get posted on YouTube, but I hadn't been using my YouTube channel. That's actually changing because I don't have as much time to blog and write stuff, and I've got a 45-minute drive, so I found that if I turn the camera on my cell phone on, rather than just talking to myself and looking crazy, I can actually record a video and post it afterwards. But the other good news about Denver is that the Godless Bitches will be there. Beth, Jen, and Tracy are going down there. We're going to set up and do kind of a live podcast, but we're not going to be streaming it live. We're going to record a Q&A session with them and do it kind of Godless Bitches freeform podcast style, which we'll post afterwards. But this will be the coming out party, I guess, at a convention for the Godless Bitches. So that's going to be fun. And in November,
cool.
Skepticon 5. And now I can officially say that I will be speaking at Skepticon because they've finally announced all the speakers. I've known for ages, but then they decided they were going to tease people by saying so-and-so will be there, and so-and-so. And then they used the names to tease people, and then they said, oh, yeah, and Matt's going to be there too. But I'm really looking forward to Skepticon. Having never been, I'm really thrilled that we're going to get to go this year. And a special thank you, and I'm not going to do it by name because it's – I don't like releasing people's names without asking, but a lot of you know the ACA has a building now, which we've had the floors refinished. We got bookshelves up. We're going to be taking an inventory of the books that we already have as soon as I get an inventory system set up, and we're going to be using that building. It's the ACA. It's not actually the ACA. It's the ACA library, and we may be doing shows from there, including nonprofits. Might even be moving the TV show there, getting rid of the public access studio entirely.
Yeah.
We haven't decided about that. The advantages of doing that are that we get to go back to 90 minutes. We can take Skype calls, Google Plus calls, whatever else, and we can do the show whenever. The disadvantages are that we lose the cable public access studio. We won't be on cable TV live anymore if we do that. And I'm not sure whether we should or not.
When was the last time we actually got a call from Austin?
That's part of the reason that I'm not opposed to moving it. I just really value that community connection and the amazing opportunity that public access TV afforded us. I'd like to not ditch it so that maybe we can keep public access TV around for other people. But I have to recognize, you know, I don't want to appear to be, you know, a Luddite. We're moving into an age where anybody can do a show like this.
Right.
Yep. So public access studios aren't as needed in order for us to be able to do a show, but the fact is not everybody has internet access, and this is something that's pretty much freely available to the community as long as you've got cable, and it is some people's only opportunity to have access to equipment to put together shows, so. But anyway, the thank you that I was sending out was to an individual who not only sent us a couple boxes of books, but built up two PCs and sent them to the ACA. I've got them downstairs, and I'm going to make sure that they work and get them set up. And one of them will be, you know, the office machine, and the other one will be the video audio editing machine that we use whenever we do stuff at the building.
Cool. Very nice.
So that's all the announcements.
Out of the blue.
Yeah.
Great. Things are moving forward.
So.
All right. Well, this week on Freethought Blogs, we have Chris Rotta, the longtime arch enemy of bullshit historian David Barton.
Oh, right.
David Barton, for those who need to be caught up to speed, is basically this disgustingly influential Christian historian who, on many occasions, has flat out made up quotes from our founding fathers to prove that they were way more Christian than anyone actually gives them credit for. He's here in Texas. He's good friends with a lot of people who are on the school board, the educational panel, which, you know, year after year keeps trying to introduce more creationism and stuff like that into the textbooks. Anyway, over at freethoughtblogs.com/Rotta, which is a blog called This Week in Christian Nationalism, Chris says that David Barton's radio show co-host posted on his website saying, if you can show me specifics that back up the image created by the critic's innuendo, much of which I've just repeated, I'll post it right here for the world to see. She posted, and after some delay, he sure enough did. Chris wrote, let's see. I can absolutely show you the specifics that back up the image created by the critics. Many of the claims in Mr. Barton's books are debunked in a book I released in 2006. My book is not only thoroughly footnoted with original sources, many of them the exact same documents cited by Mr. Barton, but there is a footnote archive on my website containing images of all the documents cited in my footnotes so that anyone reading my book can instantly view the original sources for themselves to verify them. My book debunks many of the lies found in Mr. Barton's The Jefferson Lies, including, but not limited to, just about everything that Mr. Barton claims about religion at the University of Virginia and Jefferson's other educational endeavors, Chapter 5 of my book, and Mr. Barton's claims in his chapter on the Jefferson Bible about Jefferson promoting Christianity to the Indians, another lie that Barton made up. There are many more examples I could give, but I think these two should suffice as proof that Mr. Barton's critics are absolutely correct. And then she links to a free PDF of her book. Rick Green, who runs the website, posted a sort of predictably snotty reply saying, Chris Rotta seems to have devoted her life to making YouTube videos of herself ranting about wall builders, and now she's teamed up with the military version of the ACLU. Her criticisms are exactly like those I described in my previous blog, but even more illogical and lacking real substance. blah, blah, blah. You can read that full letter on Ed Barton's blog, freethoughtblogs.com/dispatches. He also says, I will not hand over my hard-earned outlets to critics who have proven themselves to be illogical and slanderous. And of course, you can read the entire book with all the footnotes at the PDF that Chris linked and see exactly how full of shit David Barton is. And the answer is very, very.
You know, this is frustrating because we've dealt with Barton for years. Right. And Barton is somebody who refuses to debate, you know, his critics.
He doesn't have to. I mean, he's not a historian. He has no real credentials. He claims to have, like, a personal stash of correspondences. And he's got the ear of a bunch of right-wing assholes with political power.
Yeah, I don't care whether or not he's got credentials. I mean, that never has any impact, but it does demonstrate that he's portraying himself as an expert.
Right.
And when someone challenges what he has to say, rather than defending it as an expert would, he's flatly said that he's just not going to entertain, you know, the objections of the critics. And he's got this throng of people who, you know, as evangelicals who are have bought into this myth of a Christian nation from the get-go. And they are just, I mean, it doesn't matter how bizarre what he says is, they just eat it up. I mean, there are plenty of things that he's said, you know, that people have to go hunting for the truth. It's one thing to quote mine or to spin a particular historic event in a way that makes it look like it supports your case. But there's other things that he said, like, what was it about the founding fathers settled the creationism evolution debate long before Darwin was even born? I just, how do you not see through that? I don't know. I don't know how you don't recognize that, and then when people make it clear to you, no, that's impossible. This
right.
Didn't exist at that time. It doesn't matter. There's nothing you can say that will make people aware or care, I guess, that they're being lied to, because the information that they're being presented with supports their preconception.
Right. Yeah, I've got the quote here. This is from last year. He said, as far as the founding fathers were concerned, they'd already had the entire debate over creation and evolution. And you get Thomas Paine, who is the least religious founding father, saying you've got to teach creation science in the classroom. Scientific method demands that. There was no such thing as that anybody called creation science.
That's crazy.
Writing.
Yeah, it's a really interesting interpretation, and kind of pathetic that if he's going to throw something like that on somebody, he probably shouldn't throw it on Thomas Paine, where it's just crazy.
I mean, he's making up quotes like a 5-year-old would make up quotes.
Yeah. And by the way, George Washington was totally opposed to the internet.
Yeah.
True story.
True story. The Pat Rob. I miss Jeff. We need to get Jeff on to do more.
Yeah, it's true. More Pat Robertson impersonations.
No. That was real. Well, see, that now he won't do it because we're on video and people will know that Pat's not really on the nonprofits.
That's true. He could hold up a cardboard cutout or something. That would be cool.
Speaking of Pat Robertson, didn't he say something remarkably crazy the other day?
I'm sure we can find it.
Because it happens every day.
Pretty much.
But I don't know if this will actually work.
You gonna play a clip?
I'm gonna try and play a clip.
All right.
I'm gonna try this desktop
see
sharing.
How this shows up.
And you guys.
Wow. That is very loud.
That's an alarm warning me. So let's see if I share that so you can see this.
Ooh, it works.
Yeah, but are you going to get the audio?
You got a full screen.
Is it satanic? Is it?
We hear it.
We hear it.
Who are atheists? They hate God. They hate the expression of God. And they are angry with the world, angry with themselves, angry with society, and they take it out on innocent people who are worshiping God. And whether it's a Sikh temple or a Baptist church or a Catholic church or a Muslim mosque, whatever it is, I just abhor this kind of violence, and it's the kind of thing that we should do something about. But what do you do? What do you do? Well, you talk about the love of God and hope that it has some impact.
So you hope.
Wow.
Stop lying to us, Matt. That was really Jeff D. in your room, right?
So it was atheists who do all this bad stuff. Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, not only does he try to blame atheists for the Sikh temple shootings, but he said, what was it the other day, where he was talking about homosexuality and was like, when gay people can produce a baby from that part of the body that they're so obsessed with, I'll change my views on homosexuality. How weird was that? Oh, look, it's the Dinner of Champions.
Yay!
Yes, on days when there's nonprofits, we don't have time to actually cook, so we order pizza.
Great. Let's wrap the show up quick. I'm hungry.
Who's got the next news bit?
Oh, gosh. All right, so go ahead.
I've got one. Let's see. Poll shows atheism on the rise in the U.S.
Okay.
Religiosity is on the decline in the U.S. and atheism is on the rise, according to a new worldwide poll. The poll called the Global Index of Religiosity and Atheism found that the number of Americans who say they are religious dropped from 73% in 2005, the last time the poll was conducted, to 60%. At the same time, the number of Americans who say they are atheist rose from 1% to 5%.
Whoa, that's a big jump.
Yeah.
That's a 400% increase.
I don't know. The poll was conducted by Wingallup International and is based on interviews with 50,000 people from 57 countries and 5 continents.
What's the source of this?
I'm looking at Washington Post on faith.
Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't.
I'm trying to avoid being rude by chewing and like biting my pizza on the lower third.
So you got anything, Russell?
I have a few things. This isn't particularly newsworthy, but in all the discussion about Mitt Romney this week, since he picked a vice presidential running mate, one of the stories that I was reading had the most awesome thing I've ever seen written about Mormonism. And I just thought I'd share it with you, not in a political sense, but just because in general, trashing other religions is fun.
Positive atheism, right. Knock yourself out.
So there's a new book about, there's several books that are coming out about Mormonism these days because people are understandably curious. And one of them has lengthy quotes from Mark Twain, who was, alive around the time that this was just kicking into gear.
Right.
And apparently Mark Twain read the Book of Mormon, and he was, in addition to a prolific writer, something of a literary critic himself.
Oh, my.
So Mark
this
Twain
cannot
says...
end well.
No.
Mark Twain says, "The book seems to be merely a prosy detail of imaginary history, with the Old Testament for a model, followed by a tedious plagiarism of the New Testament. The author labored to give his words and phrases the quaint old-fashioned sound and structure of our King James translation of the scriptures, and the result is a mongrel, half glibness and half ancient simplicity and gravity. The latter is awkward and constrained, the former natural but grotesque by contrast." Whenever he found his speech growing too modern, which was about every sentence or two, he ladled in a few such scriptural phrases as "exceeding sore" and "it came to pass," etc., and made things satisfactory again. "And it came to pass" was his pet. If he had left those out, his Bible would have been only a pamphlet.
Wow.
I love Mark Twain.
Am I going to have to read the Book of Mormon and then do an intro based on that? Or
you can just go watch the musical.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
so, I take it he was not impressed by the magic golden plates.
Not so much.
Oh, dear.
He wasn't impressed by the Bible either. I find it kind of ironic that my uncle, who was a medical missionary for a number of years, and the kind of most spiritually wise in the family, so everybody kind of looked up to him, talked to him. As a gift one year, he gave me a hardbound copy of the collected works of Mark Twain, not realizing that he was giving me the writings of an atheist to religion. And I didn't find that out either. It was many years afterward that I realized that this brilliant wit and satirist was also opposed to the very things that I believed growing up.
Right. Mark Twain on the celebrity atheist list isn't listed as an atheist because he never specifically labeled himself that way. But
right.
He wrote, like, Letters from the Earth, which is just a hilarious satire of the whole concept of Satan and fallen angels and just, you know, ridicules like crazy all the ideas that people have about heaven and stuff.
Yeah. So I want to go back for a second, if we can, to the story that Dennis had.
Okay.
When we start talking about polls, about people's religious beliefs and how they identify, I agree that it's, you know, it's really interesting that, and perhaps very significant that people that there's been such a huge rise in the number of people who self-identify as atheists. I think that basically says, yeah, you know, we're winning, and not just perhaps changing people's mind, but changing people's attitudes about the term. And recently we saw, I think it was a Pew poll that showed that for the first time in history in the United States, more than half the country would vote for an atheist for president, which I can remember just a couple years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if this is going to happen in my lifetime.
Right.
When we're seeing the study that shows that we're the least trusted minority only a couple of years ago,
yeah,
and now half the people
up there with rapists and murderers and stuff. It's like,
well, we were right down there with terrorists and homosexuals.
Yeah.
But just in a couple of years, we see all of a sudden now 50% of the country is willing to vote for an atheist. It tells me a couple things. One, you can't really put much stock in polls.
Sure.
That is unfortunately the first thing it tells me, because the methodology is such that I'm almost convinced that you could get almost any result you wanted within a certain, you know, error level.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, polls can be accurate. It's just a question of whether you're able to detect major flaws in the methodology. Because, I mean, you could say the same thing about scientific studies. Like, you know, if you don't know the specific peer review process that they've been through,
right,
you know, there's a lot of fake statistics that people would like to pass off as real scientific knowledge. But there is this sort of core of reliable polling and ways of formulating unbiased questions that get you actual useful information.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm just saying that, by and large, when we hear poll information, mm-hmm, I'm usually unimpressed.
Skeptical, yes.
Because I don't know, you know, I don't have the background information about the poll, you know, and we know that how you ask a question,
mm-hmm,
affects what kind of answer you're likely to get.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
It's what I will say, though, is that there seems to be a trend in the results that is very positive for the non-believer community across the board. How
right.
big of a bump it is, I don't know.
Yeah,
and I've never been that concerned about people absolutely identifying as atheist so much as getting people to let go of their dogmatic religious beliefs, et cetera. Dennis, you had something.
I don't know if we're, you know, it may be that we're not creating new atheists. We're just allowing the atheists that are out there to admit that they are. You know, who knows?
Right. Well, I mean, we're sort of empowering them by
yes.
by being public. And I don't just mean the nonprofits, because, you know, as much as I'd like to think that we're hugely popular, we're a sliver compared to the audience.
It's all us.
But
right.
It's all us. We've changed the world.
Yeah. Mission accomplished, guys.
Well, I read an interesting thread on Why Won't God Heal Amputees, where a guy described what happened when he was a Christian and got in arguments on, you know, forums like Why Won't God Heal Amputees, how that turned him atheist. And it was an interesting description, and included the, you know, how he'd get in an argument, he'd dig in his heels, but then he needed to research to be able to counter argument,
mm-hmm,
and that's what cracked his shell.
Right. There's definitely an aspect where when you argue with a religious person, which we do all the time, one of the most frustrating things is that they have this sort of air of arrogant certainty, so that, you know, in the moment, no matter what facts you present, you know, there is that kind of digging your heels in that you were talking about, where they just say, well, you know, I know that I'm right, and you're stupid for disagreeing with me.
But they want a better argument.
Right.
Yeah, it's you know, and of course they would and do say the same thing about us.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference is, you know, who actually doesn't have evidence on their side. Not so much who does, but who doesn't.
David Barton.
And, right. Yeah, and the side with the burden of proof has a paucity of evidence to support. I watched I'm blanking out. Jamie and Swiss's talk from TAM. I saw the video that was posted the other day. Very passionate. And I made some comments. PZ had commented on it and was, you know, he was saying that he agreed with like 2/3 of it, but that Jamie went off the rails. And I'm not wanting to get into the skeptic schism thing here, because I think some of PZ's criticism was right on the mark. I probably agreed with more of it. And I think, you know, for what Jamie said, I was nodding and saying, yeah. And then a couple times there was like, well, that's potentially unfair. But my point here is that you've got somebody who is clearly a passionate defender of reason, skepticism, and I can say from personal experience, not at all shy about actually actively attacking religion right to the face of the religious believer. This is being, and yet what he's advocating in that clip is kind of this same idea that, as a matter of practicality, for example, skepticism in his tent, and as the JREF and other things define it, isn't going to address claims that aren't testable. And I don't have any objection to that. I've never had any objection to them defining their role and saying, you know, this is not the sort of thing that we're actually going to address. We're going to focus on testable claims. My objection has always been them saying that skepticism cannot address untestable claims, because that I wholeheartedly reject. But as I was watching it, and it was, I love seeing people who are passionate about what they believe and trying to advance the movement in a positive direction, even if we don't completely agree on the nuts and bolts of it. And that's why a lot of these discussions, you know, things that I'm not going to get into today, because I've been, you know, dug in all over the place, they are distractions. And yet, in spite of all that, I think it's clear that we're making progress, that it's by and large positive progress, and that in the event or in those occasions where we get down to kind of arguing about brass tacks and talking about how we're going to address things, we have within our communities the exact same problem that we have outside the communities. And that is, one, the biggest problem, I think, is with communication, and that we come in assuming that the other person knows what we're talking about to the same extent that we do. Mm-hmm. And so we take shortcuts in communication, and what we say is not what they hear. And the attitude that we portray, one of, you can appear arrogant, you can appear arrogant or confident, depending on who's listening to you. You can appear condescending, or you could also, you know, appear very amenable to conversation, or only interested in conflict and over the same comments. We've talked about it before on the show, and I know you know, Russell's dealt with it too, as the host of the show, we get feedback and somebody will listen to a call and say, best call ever, worst call ever, love the way he handled it, hate the way he handled it, you guys were way too patient, you guys were way too much, you know, too big of an asshole to this guy.
Sometimes both things up for the same call.
Yes, and that's the point, is that it's about the same call. And it's, I think it's helped me realize that I'm, when we do the show, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to convince the person on the phone, I've talked about that before as well, that we're talking to the broader audience because other people are going to see this.
Right.
And there are people who are going to be convinced for different reasons. If there was one bulletproof argument or one bulletproof approach, we'd just use it. But that's not true, and it's not true not just for religion, but for the vaccination discussions and climate change and homeopathy and Bigfoot and UFOs and everything that's within the purview of skepticism, which is everything. There's nothing that's not within the purview of skepticism in the broader sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And in the vein of leaving everything subject to skepticism, I'd also like to say that I don't mind receiving criticism on my style on the show. It's just that I don't always automatically believe what they say, especially if they're bringing up an issue like, you know, an issue of presentation, which I've already thought about in the past and dismissed or already decided, well, I like doing it this way and here's why. But, you know, there are times when all the feedback definitely points in one particular direction, and I never want to feel so sure of myself that I can't benefit from what the viewers say.
Yeah, I think, you know, we give each other kind of encouraging feedback on the show, but we've also, well, we've had arguments on the shows.
Oh, yeah.
But we've also had arguments. Yeah, and off the show. One of the things, this was kind of as a way of, by way of an example of how, I don't know what the right word is, but how relentless I am at evaluating what I say and what I think. Perhaps obsessive might even be the correct term for it. And I won't go into the details of all this because it's in videos and it would just distract from the show. But recently I called Thunderfoot a dishonest prick. And
I thought you weren't going to get into this week.
I'm not. This is not about that. This is about something else. And as soon as I called him that, I made a comment to some friends of mine in an email saying, I shouldn't have done that. And not, I shouldn't have called him a name because I think the name was accurate. But in the context of what we're talking about, I should have picked something other than prick. I should have gone, you know, douche or whatever, so that it wasn't a gender-based insult. And in the
some
comments...
good insults are sexual.
They are. And, yes. And you know, it's kind of like all the good curse words are religious, and I'm not going to concede those to the I'm going to say Jesus fucking Christ, whatever I want. But the... you know, I had already recognized this, and when the video went live, one of the comments that I saw that I haven't responded to because I just don't have time to go through all of them, but I'll respond here, was basically somebody calling me out saying that it was hypocritical of me in the context of sexism to call him a prick. And they're right. It was. It doesn't have the same impact, for example, as other words that people use. But
right.
I had already recognized this and made a conscious decision that I would use a different term when dealing with this in the future. And the only reason that I continued to use this term in this context was because I was being honest to what I actually said. I didn't want to change. You know, you go on a video and say, I called him a douche, and somebody's like, no, you called him a prick, you know. But,
jerk so doesn't sound have think, the same impact.
I would think douche would be sexist too, because
no, douche is just a nasty, gross device that is horrible. Just, I'm pretty sure that somebody might be walking towards the room to explain what's all wrong with douches right now.
Well.
Jerk. Yes.
That was right.
Douche is not sexist, because although douches are things women have used, it was only because people were sexist and thought vaginas were just horribly dirty that they made douches, and douching is actually harmful to your vagina.
Ah. Okay.
It's not harmful to my vagina, though.
So you're calling him someone harmful to someone's vagina.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Which could be one of those compliments. Who knows?
Yes.
All right. Have we got another bit? I'm digging for email.
I don't have real news. I have this article which showed up. I haven't really vetted it yet, but I understand it's not that great. It's, I guess, by a non-believer who wrote something called 8 Non-Religious Reasons to Take Your Kids to Church.
Ooh, this will be fun.
This could turn out to be another Alain de Botton type guy. But on the other hand, I've said myself, if your kid wants to find out what's at church, you should be the one to take him. So we'll see how he does. This is at shine.yahoo.com/parenting. So it's a column from parents.com by Nick Schell. Year after year, polls like the recent one by Gallup show that churchgoers not only experience more positive emotions, but also less negative emotions than people who do not regularly attend church, synagogue, or mosque. Okay. Or atheist groups, I bet, but there aren't many of those.
Yeah, and I imagine the studies really haven't looked in. Oh, I don't know. I can't talk about stuff at all.
We were talking about methodology, weren't we? Yes.
Yeah, well, so maybe you're not like me, having been intrigued since kindergarten on how we all got here and what happens to us after we die. This is for the agnostics who are curious about taking their kids to church, as well as for those who haven't had much exposure to church but are curious enough to consider checking it out. Actually, I'm kind of doubting this guy's an atheist. I think he's just trying to make a sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I always, you know, it's strange to me when they say that this article is for these people, when they're talking about perhaps a universal benefit.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Number one, friends. For you as well as your kids, most of my friends and my wife's friends are somehow traced back to our church. In fact, we met each other through a mutual friend that I met through a group of friends I knew through my church.
Dennis, give us the first rebuttal.
Well, none of my friends did I meet at church. Zero.
And you have some friends, right?
I have too many.
Yeah. You have
too many friends.
Too many friends.
It's hard to keep track of them all.
Go away. I won't be your friend anymore since we have too many.
All right. I'm unfriending you right now.
I'm with Dennis, but I understand the author's point in that it is basically a social venue where you can meet people that you like. And I have friends who are church-going. I have family who I consider to be friends as well, who are church-going individuals. And I have friends that I met at church that are still my friends to this day. Hi, Brent. My absolute best friend of, like, for my entire life, still a religious individual, probably not watching the show right now, was at my wedding. We don't get to see each other very often because we're in different cities, but we definitely met at church along with a bunch of other people who I still love.
I'd like to say also that I still consider myself good friends with Kyle Miller, the pastor that I invited on the show that one time. A couple months ago, we actually got together for lunch at Rudy's. And,
cool.
You know, we talked about his church and my group and sort of the similarities and differences. And, you know, he made a little bit of a half-hearted pitch to convince me, and I swatted it away, and we laughed. And, he's a cool guy.
So on this guy's first point, I think the consensus is that, yes, you can get friends at church, but that you can also get friends at other places.
Right.
And if church is your only option, you probably live in a fairly sad area, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you should or shouldn't go to church.
Right. Number two is similar. It's community. Similarly, you find yourself among other people who are bound to have things in common with you and your children, even if it's just the fact that you are parents with kids around the same age at the same place.
That's why we go to science fiction conventions. Come on.
Right.
This is one that I actually agree with. pretty not necessarily completely, but pretty much. And that is, churches have had a long-standing advantage for And one of the things that they've done well is to build communities. We've talked before about how, you know, if I was still a Southern Baptist and Beth and I packed up and moved to a new place, we can go find a Baptist church or pretty much several different denominations and have an instant community that is there ready to help out.
And I'm sure they'll totally love you, Matt.
No. I'm just saying that if I was still there, if I was still in, you know, a believer and participating, there is an advantage. Granted, none of this goes, not the religious claims are true, but having a ready built community that exists kind of ubiquitously so that wherever you pack up and go is a benefit.
Having an in group.
Assuming that you're in the in group or the club.
It's the reason why the atheist community of Austin, one of the things that we've tried to encourage is the community aspect.
That's important. Social animals.
There are people who have no interest in that, in that benefit.
But as far as just generic community and opportunities for friends go, that is one other option.
Yep. What's he got next?
I've been looking ahead, and it gets worse, but not yet.
All right. I wanted it to get worse.
Number 3, activities and events. There's always something happening on the church calendar, and much of it involves free food. Not to mention most of the activities themselves don't cost anything to participate. Basically, it's free entertainment with families you have stuff in common with. I see this "you have stuff in common with" thing coming up a few times.
Right.
I'm a little dicey on that.
Yeah, because if you're not a believer, then you're not actually engaging with people that you have that much in common with. But my big thing is, or my issue with this is that, it's a way to get to do fun stuff and eat food for free. There's plenty of other events. Uh-oh, I have a visitor. There's plenty of other
looms over your shoulder.
In Austin, you can just pick up a Chronicle and find the stuff to do.
But yeah, and there's the internet. You can find out from another city. Yes?
I was just going to say, Amanda Johnson wrote something about this on Friendly Atheist, specifically about how atheists need to have more low-cost events. And I will be talking to her on Godless Bitches tomorrow, most likely.
Okay. Of course, it's easy to host low-cost or free events when you get tithes.
Yes, when people are getting 20% of their income, and you don't have to pay taxes on it. The land
to the tune of $700 billion in lost revenues a year, as I recall.
Yes. I don't want to get on a rant about that right now. Let's get to it.
Number 4, child care. Free child care.
Wow, I'm sensing a trend.
Yeah. While you're in the main worship service as well as Sunday school, your kids are being supervised and taught in their own age-appropriate Sunday school and worship service where they make you crafts out of construction paper and popsicle sticks. Okay, well, first of all, if you weren't in church, you wouldn't need child care on Sundays. True. And they don't offer it the rest of the time.
True. Second of all, what those kids are being taught is the reason that I speak out against religion.
Yeah.
Right.
But that brings us to number 5, family values.
Oh.
Church is a great place to get moral reinforcement. It's no secret that pop culture, everyday life, and even just our own negativity can be a drag on our personal, on our ideal personal standards. And Matt's making the pose that I would also like to
make. Ugh.
I'll clarify that.
It makes us feel good.
What they call family values, I'm not convinced have anything to do with family and are not the values that I respect.
Certainly not what's in the book.
After seeing, and yes, I'm highlighting bad examples, because I realize there are plenty of good religious people who value a lot of the same things I do. They didn't get those values from their religion. They may have got those values, learned them from other religious individuals, but the values didn't come from their religion. This is people ignoring what their holy books and what their religion has traditionally said about things. And when I see people who are supposed to be family, and their value is to pick and poke and belittle and guilt trip people, and, oh, you don't believe in God anymore, honey? Well, blah, 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 and we're praying for you and all the, you know, oh, you're gay? You're done. You're not my kid anymore.
Right. You're out of the house.
Yeah. Sorry. Also, you got raped and you're pregnant? You're stuck with it for the rest of your, you know, you're going to carry this kid to term. And then probably it'll end up being raised by your family because they value poisoning young minds.
Yeah. Unconditional love with conditions.
Yeah.
I'm also kind of generally disgusted by this last bit where it says it's no secret that pop culture, et cetera, can be a drag on your personal standards. You know, there's this kind of subtle, relentless negativity about religion, which is also, you know, which they also feel like they have the privilege to assume everybody knows because they keep repeating it all the time. That if you listen to music and watch movies and read books that aren't in the Christian culture, it will just, you know, suck you into a morass.
Now, this one's actually true, because when I hear Justin Bieber, I want to kill people.
But, you know, I tend to go with, you know, to each his own, right? Or her own.
Yeah.
I mean, there are plenty of other people's tastes in pop culture that I hate. But, you know, I also love superheroes and science fiction and video games and, you know, and all the stuff that Christians, you know, and it's not their taste, but it's not good enough to say, you know, screw that Justin Bieber guy, I won't listen. They have to say, oh, you know, it will, what was it again? Be a drag on our our ideal personal standards.
Right.
I love the kind of lingo, the be a drag thing. This seems to be something that was like written by a Unitarian Universalist, some aging hippie who's trying to draw people back to the feel good community, which, you know,
I'm not drag, man.
Drag.
But, you know, we're talking about people's personal preferences. I would imagine if people got a hold of my iPod, everybody would find something on there they like and something on there they absolutely hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, this next one is going to annoy us, I think.
Oh, good.
Motivation. Imagine the hope that comes out of the belief that the creator of this universe not only loves you, but has a plan for your life. Wait a minute. I thought agnostics were supposed to be reading this article and going to church despite their agnosticism. I think he's trying to trick people.
What?
That would
bait and switch, you think?
When you go to and belong to a church, you are exposed to a way of thinking that ultimately affects how you see the world, yourself, and others.
Yeah, black and white.
All right, this guy's bullshit.
Yeah.
Is this the last point, or did he have one worse?
No, he has. That was six. There's two more.
What are they, real quick?
Number seven, opportunities to help others. You'd be amazed at some of the unique ways you can help others in your community through your church.
Hey, you know what would be even better is if you didn't waste that time in church trying to find opportunities to help others and spent that time helping others.
Yeah. Does part of that helping constitute praying?
Yes.
Apparently.
Because, you know, that slants the help.
And finally, number eight is routine. When you expose yourself and your kids to all this positivity every week, after a while, you're bound to see a noticeable difference in the way your family interacts.
That I agree with.
There will be a noticeable difference. Like, do we have to? Just for good measure, he throws in a little Pascal's wager in the conclusion, saying, the way I look at it, even if at the end of my life I was wrong about God this entire time, and when we die, we just die, I still wouldn't regret having believed. Ugh. Fight me.
He's right. He wouldn't regret having believed because he's going to be dead, and he won't regret anything.
Right.
There's no him anymore. Hey, so quick email that we can kind of talk about.
Sure.
It's been forever and a day since Dennis actually sat in on the TV show, so...
I know. I should get there again.
I'm sorry that you won't probably have a lot to say about this one, but somebody emailed saying, I've been watching a lot of The Atheist Experience courtesy of YouTube. Actually, it's courtesy of fans of the show who posted on YouTube. Thanks to them. But based on this experience, I believe one could form the opinion that the callers to the show are screened for maximum idiocy. What's scary is that I'm pretty sure that they're not. Best wishes and the good work. So let me explain the screening process for the Atheist Experience TV show. Somebody sits on the phone and it rings and they say, hi. They say something like, this is the Atheist Experience. What's your name and what are you calling about? And the only thing that happens after that, apart from them taking down the notes, is that we have four lines. And when I'm on, I have a rule that I want three of those lines to be either theists or positions that are contentious so that there's a conversation and not just people calling in to say, oh, I love the show. Thanks so much, right. Which we appreciate, but it doesn't make the show better. And as long as that's, you know, as long as they meet those criteria, they're in. That's it. That's all the screening that goes on. And so if you want more intelligent callers or people who are better theologians or better representatives of a particular religious view, you need to have those people call in. You need to get a hold of your ministers, your professors at your theology, at your seminary, and have them call in.
And you probably come to the front of the line.
We keep hearing about that sophisticated theology. We just, you know, never get exposed to it for some reason.
Well, you know, to be fair, you know, the sampling of people who call is probably sort of like, let's say, going to the DMV.
Sure.
I mean, when you stand in line and you get a completely random sampling of people, you know, they're not handpicked to look like idiots, but was it? I think Jerry Seinfeld said something like, have you been down to the DMV lately? You know, 95% of the population is undateable.
Yes, yeah, so statistics are based on mediocrity, so it's like, yeah.
Right. And the problem is when people hear theologians with their own show or at, you know, at church, those guys are probably self-selected to be like, you know, the 90th percentile of people who are decent at speaking about the stuff that they're interested in. And I guess it's kind of jarring to just have your average schlub who thinks that they know what they're doing call in and find out that not so much.
It's kind of like the live action shows where, you know, American Idol, where you see people go on there and sing, and obviously they never listen to themselves. They thought, oh, it must be easy.
And that part, of course, is the best part of the season.
Yes.
I mean, after that, we move from downright awful to just kind of meh. So.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we've hit the hour mark, and somebody's microphone has, like, some background fuzz that's making the recording ugly. So I guess Dennis can just bring us home.
I can't hear it, so it's probably me.
It could be. Oh, I'm hearing silence.
I'm still here.
Ah, okay, good. Okay, well.
Yeah, then it was me.
That was our show. We'll be back next week with another exciting episode. Until then, I'm Dennis Lube with Matt Dillahunty and Russell Glasser.
Ciao.
Saying, stay off our lawn.
Okay, I stopped the recording. Broadcast is still going on. Now it's the time for the after show party for all the people who actually tuned in.
What are we going to stripping now?
Huh? I had I had the article, I had Ark Encounter up on my screen here, and they're talking about the fire-breathing dragons, man.
Oh, I didn't know you had more news.
Yeah.
Well?
We'll bring it up next time.
Okay.
Fire-breathing dragons. I'm wondering, are they going to have that in the museum as well? You know?
That I don't know. Uh-oh. I'm being visited by an apparition. You grabbed the bottom of your shirt.
Red.
Off the camera. I was like, what's going on? What's up? Nothing. Ah. Oh, okay. She was told to come in and smack me on the forehead. I don't know. Who told you that, and why would you do that to them? You're not supposed to be encouraging violence. Oh, she listens to the fans. Yeah, now that you've said that, I know what they're going to say next. Anything, so next week, let's discuss our calendar and plans for next week. It's the 21st of August. I don't think that there's any conflict on my schedule for next Tuesday. Is everybody good with next Tuesday?
I think I'm cool with that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Russell says, yeah, sure.
That's the enthusiasm.
The following Tuesday is the 28th, and I'm pretty sure that we will have no nonprofits and possibly... Well, I'm not sure. There may be, maybe nonprofits and godless bitches. There may not be. This is the week before we head out, to Denver. And so there's a bunch of errands we're going to have to run before we leave town, including figuring out what we're going to do with the cats, which you haven't seen. Usually there's a kitty that sneaks in here while I'm on the show. I can't see the chat at all, Russell. Did anybody in the chat who is actually watching live have, like, a question they wanted us to hit before we turn off the stream?
I'm going to say no, but I don't know. If you guys have anything, if anybody wants a Stephen Feinstein update.
I do.
I'm working on the latest, but it's so annoying to read.
Stephen Feinstein?
Oh, yeah.
You refresh our memories?
I got challenged by this presuppositional apologist, and everybody who's ever talked to a presuppositional apologist says, just don't talk to them, you'll hate yourself.
Yeah, that's no point.
But I've gotten a lot of encouraging feedback, so I'm glad I've been participating because, you know, I feel like some people can benefit this, so I'm soldiering on through, and there's two more posts to go on each side, and he got the first word, so I get the last, and I intend to take full advantage of that.
Cool.
I was just attacked by a cat who didn't want to be on the show.
Okay.
So, yeah, I got to read read all of it.
Somebody wants to know if you know Hank Green. I don't know who Hank Green is.
Hank Green. Why do I know that name?
I don't know.
I don't. It's not ringing a bell, which isn't surprising, actually. My memory's not what it used to be.
Cage, if you were on the TV show chat room, you'd already have been kicked a long time ago. Piss off.
Oh, hey, so here's an email exchange just for the after show people. I won't give the guy's name. But Russell and I have both replied, and we just got a new reply in.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
He says, I was just wondering if you guys have ever heard of a man named Edward Albert Meyer or Billy Meyer. This guy will give you a lot of answers about why we believe in God. Or check out YouTube. Randolph Winters gives a great presentation on him, just to give you a quick overview that is not boring. And if you like what you hear... Then there is a more detailed account on YouTube about 25 hours long. Look under Billy Meyer contact notes, 1 through 152, about 10 minutes apiece.
Oh, and yeah.
Winters has also written a book titled The Pleiadian Mission, A Time of Awareness, great book. Also, if you would check out Dr. Michael Newton or Dr. Walter Simkew, I'm going to bet, without ever looking them up, that those guys' doctorates are probably not what I would consider doctrine.
Yeah. Oh, he must have sent that last reply to only you. Since
oh, yeah. So there was this back and forth.
Wow.
And somebody said, oh, he's not pitching God so much as aliens. And he wrote back and said, he's not pitching neither. He's not asking us to listen to 25 hours worth of videos. Probably about an hour and a half.
Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, I'm not even going to listen to 5 minutes of videos.
Yeah, I don't have a life.
So he says, but I can tell you briefly, in my opinion from the research, there were two gods in the Bible, one in the First Testament and one in the New Testament, but they were not really gods, just celestial beings from a different planet, far more advanced in technology and spirit.
Doesn't that basically make him a Raelian?
Kinda. Telepathy, telekinesis, etc., made them look like gods to the very primitive humans, and he was asking what I thought about this, and I said, so you think the Bible is the story of a telepathic, telekinetic aliens, and you want to know what I think? I think that there's no demonstration that telepathy or telekinesis are real or even possible. I think that a clear reading of the Bible places this hypothesis on the same shaky footing as various conspiracy theories. And I think that this ancient alien idea is one of the most preposterous things I've ever heard. But I'm willing to believe it just as soon as there's actual evidence for it that is significantly stronger than, wow, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Using the unevidenced Bible to support the unevidenced conspiracy theory.
I'm really channeling right now. Well, I'm not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens.
He just sent me an email saying there's evidence for telekinesis with a link to a YouTube video on Chi Energy Amazing Footage. So.
You're a magician, Matt. Why didn't you explain how that's not exactly reasonable?
I don't know, but I have a hillbilly attitude adjuster that somebody gave me.
There you go.
And wow, that's actually hard. Yeah, that would. So anyway, we're boring people, and I'm sure that any second now the number of viewers is going to drop precipitously.
Yeah. Any minute now.
I don't know. There's probably cool stuff. Oh, yep. 20 people just as soon as I said that.
They hate us.
There's more people who logged in. What's wrong with you people? The show's over. We're just sitting around screwing around. I'm not going to be, I guess I could show you a tour of my man cave.
Insight into our private lives.
Yes. Except that everything below camera level is pretty much a mess right now.
And I'm just a floating head.
Yes. Dennis looks like one of the Beatles.
By the way, Dennis, during your intro, you were leaning way forward.
Yeah, well, I had to.
Complaining that your mouth was covered by your lower third like this.
Ah, yes. Well, I can't pay attention to what I look like when I'm doing the intro.
Right.
I only hide my mouth behind the lower third when I'm eating pizza during the show. By the way, I'm sure I'll get an email about how rude that was.
I got to remember to wear a light-colored shirt next time, because this is just really...
Or you could get some camera effects and, put three other faces of you, and you could do, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yep.
All right, so we're pretty much a go for next week, barring catastrophe, which are set at about a 65% possibility.
Sure. I'll go with those
odds. Sounds good to me.
Just make stuff up. Thanks to everybody who hung around, and who knows, maybe we'll start doing something that's actually non-sucky for the after show. And maybe even for the show, too. We'll strive to do what we can. See y'all next week.
All right.
See ya.